Do you feel like your business is running your life instead of the other way around? I'm Roy Castleman. I've built multiple seven-figure companies, worked across continents, and coached high-performing entrepreneurs. But I've also been completely burnt out. At one point, I was barely seeing my daughter, drowning in stress, and one step away from walking away from it all. That's when I made a decision to build a business and a life that works for me. The journey became Elevate 360. A system to help business owners reclaim their time, find their energy again, and get back in control without sacrificing growth. And this podcast, Power Movers, is where I share real stories behind that shift. Each week, you'll hear from entrepreneurs, founders, and leaders who've walked through the fire and come out of the other side with clarity, courage, and a system that works. If you're ready to build a business that gives you more life instead of taking it away, you're in the right place. How are we doing, Power Movers? I'm here today with Ben Wiener, who is in Jerusalem. And Ben is a venture capitalist. He has written a novel, which is about pitching yourself in the venture capital world. Quite an interesting story. So I'll let you introduce yourself, Ben, and let's dig into your story of how people should raise money, but more importantly, how you get to be where you are.
Okay, thanks, Roy. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. We had a great conversation when we talked a couple of weeks ago, and I'm very impressed with your personal story. So I think there's a lot of overlap between some of the trials and tribulations that I talk about in this fictional story and a lot of what we go through in real life as entrepreneurs and creative people. So the short story is that, as you said, I'm a venture capitalist, or I tell people I'm a professional investor and an unprofessional author. So the book I wrote as a labor of love or a hobby project to try to teach something about pitching that, frankly, I could have taught in a 1,000-word blog post, but instead decided to teach in a 250-page novel. It was fun to write a story about this poor guy who is very well-meaning, has an interesting idea for his startup, but very quickly we realize that he's in big trouble. Like he's making a lot of the mistakes that classical entrepreneurs make. But in his case, those basic mistakes go to a very wild extreme. And he can't pitch his startup to save his life until he actually needs to pitch his startup to save his life. And it's a teaching tool to teach bad pitch, good pitch. Like he starts, it's always the same company. It's the same technology that he's trying to present to investors. In the beginning, it's not working for him. And things go off the rails very quickly. And it's my way of exposing entrepreneurs to a classical kind of startup pitch framework, and then why that doesn't work often, and then what he needs to discover and what the elements are of an optimal startup pitch. And not to give away the ending, because the ending has plenty of twists anyway, but clearly at some point deep into the story, he finds out or discovers through what he goes through, he finds this framework that I'm trying to teach. It's still not clear that it's going to be on time or that he's going to get out of the situation that he's in. Even if you have a sense of where the story's going, there's still some good twists and turns at the end. And there are lots of other lessons in the book that relate to the startup journey, but the main point of the book is this five-part HEART, the heart of the perfect pitch framework that I'm trying to teach. And then I'll just say, you don't need to buy the book. The book is fun and it's been a fun experience. The book reached number one on Amazon very quickly in its three nonfiction categories. It's got some great endorsements. It's got a lot of great social proof, straight 5-0 ratings, blah, blah, blah. But you don't need to buy the book if you want to understand the framework. I'm giving it away for free. You can go to the website and download all sorts of materials. The book is just a fun way to consume it and to learn some other things about startup life. But I'm not trying to withhold it. It's a gift back to the industry that's been very good to me. It's a fun way to teach something that I had a lot of fun uncovering or researching, and then just wanted to give back to the communities.
Yeah, I love that we spoke, and you straight away made your perfect playbook available to me, which I shared with a few people, and I went through it myself, and some really insightful things in there. And this idea of giving back is so important, isn't it? Yeah, we're in this world of take, and I just think it's high time people are actually giving back. And like you, I think the entrepreneur is just the best person out there. We go out, we see a problem in the world, we get passionate about fixing that problem in the world. Yeah. And then so many of us end up in the same kind of space as your characters. You end up in the space where, yeah, it's the world's just crashing down around us. And yeah, I'm sure, you know, in your own journey, and just dig into that a little bit, in your own journey, you've had some of these trials and tribulations yourself.
My wife never left me, and I wasn't chased by murderous mobsters, and I wasn't thrown in jail. And the extreme.
Well, it's still bad. It's still early, right? It's still
exactly.
early.
It's still time. She may still. But what's funny or not funny is that almost all of the stuff that happened in the beginning were things that happened to me and happened to lots of other people that I know. So the beginnings of his problem were very common, and I experienced a lot of those things too as an entrepreneur. They just get extreme in the book because it's got to be a fun story. So yes, these things are very real. They're very common. They were common in my life. They were common in the lives of lots of entrepreneurs that I work with. And I was trying to address that. There's no single entrepreneurial journey, but there are things that happen a lot. And I was trying to capture a lot of those things that happen, a lot of the misunderstandings, a lot of the misconceptions, a lot of the miscalculations.
Give us a flavor for what some of those were in your journey. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. How do you get to be sitting here with me on this podcast? Obviously, you've written a book, and what do you do? How do you do it? And obviously, yeah, we understand the concept of venture capital, but how does it fit into Ben's world?
I'll go back to something that you said earlier. I wouldn't be talking to you today, and I wouldn't not have written this book if I had not paid it forward or done some nice things for people without any expectation of reward. So just keep that as a backdrop. Like, my journey into venture capital was very improbable and very accidental, and still was very unlikely to work out. The odds were against me. I had a very unusual, localized, hyperlocal, unusual contrarian investment thesis, and I had no money and no track record as an investor 12 years ago. I really had no right to start trying to do what I did. I was very passionate about the opportunity that I thought I had seen. I thought I had seen something about the future of my city, of my local market, that other people had not yet realized. And I'm highly credentialed. I went to a very good law school. I'm a very honest, very straight shooter. And I thought that would be enough. Some people would just say, oh, Ben's a good guy. He's clearly educated. Let's just give him some money. And nobody did. My pitch was so bad, even though it was honest, but it just wasn't resonating with anybody. And it only clicked for me when two different investors like actually cursed me out. They got so upset.
Oh.
And the question is, what, it was just a business. I wasn't trying to be offensive. But when you have an unusual idea that is counter to the status quo, sometimes it's so uncomfortable for people that they react like very strongly. And thankfully, it took those two people to actually like tell me that I was an effing idiot or that I was full of SHIT.
Yeah.
It took that for me to shock me to realize my passion and my integrity is not enough to carry this. Like, I need to show more evidence. I need to reframe my pitch. And that began my journey 12 years ago into trying to understand what makes a good pitch, what makes a bad pitch into a good pitch. You're pitching the same thing. I was always pitching the same investment opportunity. But once I reframed it for investors the way they wanted to hear it, with the structure that they wanted, things started to click, and I was able to get the fund off the ground. And by the way, that first fund that I had so much difficulty in raising 12 years ago ended up investing in a company that was named by the president, I'm not making this up, that was named by the president of the United States as the most promising startup in the world. And that startup, called Breezometer, ended up being acquired by Google a couple of years ago for hundreds of millions of dollars. And I was on my way to success in the most improbable of locations and investment theses. And it only happened because A, I got slammed in the face for a really bad pitch. I then went to work studying pitching and like beginning to understand what the structure of a good pitch is. And that led me to write this book, which became number one on Amazon. So the whole thing was so crazy that my failures were what caused me to work hard and understand how to be successful. And so had I not gone through those trials, I don't think I'd be where I am today. And therefore, the book and all this work is just a way of very sincerely giving back to the industry, saying, thank you for allowing me to figure this out. And I want to give this back to other entrepreneurs so that they can have an easier time trying to do what they're doing. So that's a roundabout way of how, A, I got into venture capital, B, how I was successful in getting it off the ground when it was unlikely to succeed, and C, how...
Can you tell us what that idea was? I'm intrigued now.
The idea was, I moved I'm from the US. You can hear from my accent. I'm not from Israel. I moved to this country years ago as a lawyer, and now I'm a venture capitalist. Like, I'm a stranger in a strange land investing in Israeli startup companies that are from my city, from Jerusalem. I invest only in one city, which is very unusual. And that city had really underperformed for a long time. And I just had seen some change in the local environment 13 years ago. I was just lucky to stumble into some meetups and said, hey, I think this is big enough that somebody could build a small fund around this unique opportunity and just try to own it before anybody else realizes. Everybody else, it's a tiny little country, but most of the opportunities are in Tel Aviv, and all of the investors are there, almost all. And my thesis was the arbitrage of most to all, saying most of the opportunities are there, but almost all the attention is there. And in that gap, in the few opportunities that there are in my city, I could probably scoop them and find them before other people see them. That was the thesis. Most people thought that was completely ridiculous. My best friend told me, just stop. Stop trying to raise money for this thing. Just go get a job. It's never gonna work. Nobody's gonna give you money. And until those two investors actually cursed me out, I realized that he was right. Like, I just wasn't pitching it properly, but I still believed that there was an opportunity. And then, like I said, I restructured the pitch and was able to click with a couple of investors. So that's what I do on a daily basis. I just sit in my city and invest in a handful of the best startups that come out of this ecosystem. But the writing is meant for everybody around the world. Like, the writing about startup methodology are things that I've learned that I think apply everywhere. And I've started to teach this framework around the world, even though I learned it like on the ground here in one country. I think it applies like broadly. And
Amazing.
the book itself is set in the United States. So even though I live in another country, the entire story takes place in New Jersey, but it really could apply anywhere in the world.
I love that honest approach. You go through your own experiences, and when you go through your own experiences, that's what shapes you. That's what actually, And if you're an entrepreneur, I think you end up having the gumption to carry on and to really keep on pushing and keep on pushing and keep on pushing. And if you don't keep on pushing, you don't make it past the starting gate. It's so easy to fall back into that. I'll just go and get a job. And entrepreneurs don't.
But again, passion isn't enough. Unfortunately, it's great to be
Right.
passionate about what you do, but a lot of passionate founders still don't succeed. And I was failing. I was deeply passionate about what I was doing, but that wasn't clicking with investors. I just didn't understand deeply enough that they would not give me the benefit of the doubt, that they would not give me, because they see so many things. They're wired to be skeptical and try to find the red flags in what you're saying. And I was making that too easy for them. So I needed to front load my pitch with lots of other evidence or lots of other claims before I even told them what it was that I was trying to do. I needed to set the stage for the problem and bring evidence about the opportunity and then hit them with what I wanted to do about it, rather than just right away blasting them with my great idea and how I was going to do it. The metaphor I always use is it's like the train. You're the entrepreneur, you're driving the train. You start off at the station, you quickly zoom out of the station. And you're off and running, but the investors are still back on the platform, like still wondering about all these questions. And you don't realize that they're not on the train with you. So you're just off and running with your pitch, but they're still back with all these linked questions. So you have to address those questions or those objections before you rattle off all the amazing things that you want to do. Now, that's just the beginning of the framework, but that was a big part of, I think, a fatal mistake that a lot of people make when they're pitching something that they're passionate about. They don't realize that the people that are listening to them usually don't share that passion right away.
And you said, I think one of the statistics was something like 82% of investors say that the pitches are letting people down. Is that the, yeah.
Yeah, we did a survey before I wrote the book. I just was questioning myself all the time. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm a bozo and I don't like these pitches, but maybe other investors don't find them problematic. So we did a survey around 2020 of other VCs around the world. And was anonymized so that they knew that we didn't know who they were. And it was just unequivocally powerful. Like they all said the pitch and the pitch deck are very important to us. But like you said, over 82% said on average, these pitches are just not well organized. It's not that they didn't like the venture itself or the idea, just the quality of the information wasn't properly organized. And that focus on organization of the pitch, on how the information is structured and ordered, became my life's mission over the next 2 or 3 years to research A, like, why is that? We're in 2020, 2021. Why has nobody like made this clear? Why is there so much confusion? And then B, okay, then what is the, is there a such thing as a framework that can apply to whether you have a medical device startup or a software startup or an AI startup? Is there one single framework? Is there an optimal framework to structure your pitch? And I believe that the answer is generally yes. And the only reason I believe that is because I took these structures from other fields where they've been identified for many years, and I just translated it into startup speak in a way that founders could relate to.
And yeah, you've helped a number of startups with this now. How's that all going? It is, I really like the fact that this is your last work and really pushing forward. So I guess you're wearing two hats at the moment. You're wearing the hat of let's go and do some investing and let's find the people. And then when you find them, it's okay, guys, you didn't tell me that pitch properly. So let me teach you how to do the pitch properly and you can pitch it back to me.
Yeah, I become that annoying person sometimes. I don't know if you ever had friends like this, but when you're young and in the old days when we wrote letters to each other, so
Yeah, I remember
there
them.
was always that friend that would like circle your mistakes and send it back to you. You
Yeah.
didn't capitalize this. So I feel like I'm that guy with startup pitches. Like people will pitch their startups to me and I'll send back. I really think that you should reorder it and please see my playbook and just use this. It's going to be better. Some people appreciate it. Some people find that incredibly annoying, but I'm really just trying to be helpful. The people that have used it, the most important feedback for me, I'm super happy that the book hit number one on Amazon. It's ego, from an ego point of view, that's a great day, but that's very fleeting. I'm really happy that the book has straight 5.0 reviews on Amazon. At some point, somebody will give it a four, but so far it's been straight fives. That's also amazing. That's not why I did it. I'm not trying to make money off the book. I'm giving the proceeds to charity. Why did I do it? I did it because I want to get that feedback, which I've gotten a few times from an entrepreneur who said, "Oh my gosh, I used your framework and I raised money." Or I used the framework and I found that I was more in control. I felt power of control over my pitch. I felt comfortable with it in a way that I had never felt before. That's why I did the work.
Yeah.
And that's worth more to me than any review or sales figures or anything like that. Again, it was a way of giving back to the industry, and that's the result that I wanted. I wanted, even if one person, I felt if I put out this book and even one person says to me, "Oh my God, this helped me raise my round," then it was worth it. And thankfully, in a few months, I've already gotten a few of those, both within my orbit of people that I know and even strangers who I've heard from. So that is by far the most important feedback that I've gotten, and I look forward to many more of those positive pieces of feedback.
And you're going out, you're doing podcasts, you're doing, what else are you doing in this education space to really help people? And where do you find them? It's a, yeah, there's business shows, there's all these kind of things that obviously are melting pots, but what's working for you at the moment?
Yeah, I don't do great at self-promotion, but people have found me or people know me. So I actually had my first international keynote. Like I was flown out to a startup event. I do a lot of that here in my country, but this was the first time that a group overseas flew me out to give this keynote and this workshop to a collection of founders. So it really works well in an accelerator program or a startup conference where there are a lot of entrepreneurs in the same room. And they're all trying to do the same thing, which is raise money from bozos like me. And I can get up and present this framework in 45 minutes or an hour and say, "Here's a free upgrade." It's almost like you're getting on the plane and the flight attendant says, "Sir, would you like to have a free upgrade to business class?" I'm trying to offer that. So in a group setting at an accelerator program or an incubator or a venture capital portfolio. So I've been doing a lot of that in all those like venture VC portfolios, incubators, accelerators, startup conferences. I love doing the workshop. And when it works well, it's almost like a mentalist like exercise where you bring, sometimes I bring like a founder or two up. It's a closed room, so it's not being filmed. And I say, "You don't know me, come in peace. I'm not trying to embarrass you, but quick, go, give me 2 minute pitch." And it's very difficult for them to do that off the cuff. And I have my watch and I stop them after 120 seconds. Then I give my lecture and I give them the 5-part framework. And I say, "Okay, take 10 minutes, write down your answers to these five things. And now get up and do it again. Just read what you have." And it's transformative. Like it's just a totally, it's the same person who just did it an hour before. It's the same company. But suddenly everyone like picks their heads up. It's like, "How did you do that?" To the founder, not to me, to the person making the pitch. And so those kind of moments are very special and starts to give a hint that there might be something to this. I can explain like the research behind it and why it works so well. There's years of research behind it, but I've distilled it down to these five things that I think really are the pressure points that work best with a typical investor.
Can you give us a flavor for those if that's, yeah?
I can just rattle them off. So it's a five-part framework that I call the HEART, HEART. It's an acronym. So the HEART of the perfect pitch. And what I'm trying to say is these are the five pressure points of objection in the
Yeah.
investor's mind. And these are the ones you have to address and neutralize, like they are the pitch. And then if you have more time, you expand these out. If this is all the time you have, you can do this in a minute or two or three. Just do these five things. And those five things are H. The H is the only one that doesn't really fit so well. It should have been a W, but WEART doesn't work, so I made it an H. The H is hypothesis, start with why. So every pitch should start off with a belief statement, not a mission statement, not a value statement. A statement that says, I believe, or we believe. We at Hi, I'm Ben. I believe that the startup pitch is broken. I believe that it's either a problem or an opportunity. It's one of the two or both. Like there's a huge problem in the world today, or going to be soon, or there's a huge opportunity in the world today. But I believe something about the future that doesn't exist today. In that way, I've thrown down the gauntlet to the investor and I've said, pay attention to me because I believe something. This is like a religious, almost like a religious experience for me.
Yeah.
And I want you to either nod and say you already believe it, or probably you don't yet know enough about it, but you're willing to listen to me because I've challenged you. I've said, okay, pay attention to me because I'm going to say something that is provocative, that is unproven. That's the H. Hypothesis, start with why. And this is based on Simon Sinek's famous TED Talk and his book, Start With Why. I'm just riffing on work that other people have done. Okay. E, enormous stakes. There's a lot at stake. Again, notice when I'm getting into the solution, like when somebody asks me what, or asks an entrepreneur what you do, what I'm saying is don't answer that question. It's not what you do. It's all these things first, and then you get to what you do. So A, here's what I believe. Number two, there's a lot at stake about this problem or opportunity. There's human life, human suffering, dollars and cents, cost, whatever it is, it's big, big opportunity. So there's a lot at stake. You have to pay attention to this movie because the damsel is really in distress. Like the train is coming, she's tied to the railroad tracks. You got to pay attention and hope that we can save this thing. It's not just a kid in a candy store who wants a lollipop. There's a
Right.
damsel in distress tied to the railroad tracks. A, alternatives are grossly inadequate. Again, I still haven't told you what I want to do. I'm setting up the stage. I believe this, there's a lot at stake, and the alternatives, here's the current state of play, and it's all messed up. They're all terrible. All the ways to get this damsel off those railroad tracks are just not going to work in the period of time that we have. And then finally, the fourth thing out of the five is R. Here we finally introduce the hero. He comes riding in on his white steed to save the damsel in distress. The R is the radically differentiated solution. So it's an order of magnitude, just game-changing different than all the bad stuff that we just set up in the A. So the A was alternatives are grossly inadequate. They're all terrible. And then in contrast, our hero is a radical, revolutionary, totally differentiated solution that is 10 times better, order of magnitude, game changing, paradigm shifting. That's the ideal. And then by then, the investor really has to react to that. Like they have to decide whether we've proven, or not proven, but at least set the stage for a basis for belief. And then finally, the T are us. That's the we leave ourselves for last. The team, but it's not just team. It's the T stands for traits and skills. It's not just the team who we are, but it's why we are the right band of fools to do this crazy thing. Like what is our credibility and ability? Two different things. What is our credibility? And what are our divided abilities on the team? Or if it's just me, why do I have all the ability to do this crazy thing that I just set up? And those are the five parts. And I believe that the 82% of investors that told us that they're not happy were basically trying to say what I felt, that in most pitches, not only are those five things not emphasized, but I've been in pitches where none of those five elements were even mentioned at all.
Wow.
There was no belief statement. There was no sense of the size of the opportunity. They just assumed that we knew it. There was no real discussion of all the alternatives. There was just a competition slide, which was artificial and just mentioned a couple of companies that were close, but didn't discuss the whole range of things that humans do to solve that problem. The solution was not, the differentiation of the solution was not stressed. It was just, Yeah, we have something better. And like in school, if you have the best grade on the paper, you're going to get the best grade in the class. Being better or optimized is not good enough in startup land. It needs to be an order of magnitude better in order to attract the attention of the customers. And then finally, on the team, usually you just have on a team slide a bunch of pretty faces and their titles and where they worked before, but it doesn't tell me enough about what the credibility and the divided roles and responsibilities among how. Why are you the CEO and why is she the CTO? Like, why did you decide that? Tell me about your backgrounds and your skills that gives me the belief that you have the personas on the team to be able to build, design, and sell this thing. So I've been in pitches where I've kept a mental checklist and all five of the critical elements of the pitch were not there. And that's very depressing. I use a lot of metaphors, but what the investors were telling us is we're the judges in a singing contest, and five out of six times the people coming to pitch to us are singing out of key. It just becomes very frustrating. You're like, and I'm not putting down founders. I think if you ask me like why this is happening, I have deep respect for founders. I was one for a long time. I think founders are obsessed with their missions. They're obsessed with their products. They're obsessed with the thing that they want to do. And they're just very focused on that. They're not focused on the stupid pitch deck to bozos like me that need to give them money. And so they just throw a bunch of things on the deck and they figure if they were invited into the meeting, the investor's smart enough to figure out what they have. And many of us are really busy and we're not wired to do that extra work. We're actually wired to find a reason to say no and move on because we're going to invest in one or two out of 100 things that we see. And so the founder does need, unfortunately, to focus on the same way they're focusing on their game-changing product and their hiring and all the other things they're doing. They need to focus on the optimal way to present that information to bozos like me. And I've given them the framework to say, here, use this, and it's just going to be easier for us to digest it. It's going to work with the way our brains work, and you'll have a better chance of connecting with us.
I think that's quite an important kind of point there. Founders, we get so caught in the business that we end up not working on the business enough. It's almost the same element at play here. The big piece that I teach is the business operating system world, EOS, BOS, 90, all of these things. And we get stuck in that, okay, let's just get it done. And I'm doing 14 hours a day and 7 days a week and just keep on going because I've got to get this over the line. I've got to get the solution done. I've got to get the client happy. I've got to keep the staff and get new staff in. And it doesn't need to be that hard. If you just have a framework, like you're saying, and you can make your life easier, why not do that? Yeah, amazing. Stepping forward, where do you see this going for you? How do you see this evolving into better things? Is there a speaking career, coming forward? Is there a training career? What are you thinking?
This is a side project and it's a labor of love for me. I'm very, like I said, I'm very happy making my living as a venture capitalist. And that's what I do from what I tell people is 120% of my time is on my venture capital stuff. And so the other 30% is on this book. So this is extra time for me. This is the main game is that I'm playing is on the pitch is venture capital. The extra time I'm using for this, and therefore, wherever it goes, I'm happy to run with it. I don't have a formal plan for promoting. I've done some promotion, but very minimal. It's been mostly word of mouth and viral, and I'm happy to see that happen. I don't have aspirations of being a professional speaker. Like I said, I'm a professional venture capitalist. I'm an unprofessional author. I'm happy to keep it that way. I love speaking about it. I love being invited to groups to present it. It's fun to see the looks on their faces and get the reactions from them because it's entertaining. But it's also very enlightening. It's an eye-opening realization for them when they see how it works. So that's incredibly joyous for me, but
I think, yeah, I'm gonna, you've said a couple of times, I'm the bozo and I'm the, and to me, so many times when you get into the space where you're actually doing something you're as passionate, I mean, you're super passionate about this. We can just feel it coming across the screen and the sound. And when you get to that point and you're not looking for that big gain and you're not chasing the money, so often that's when things happen. I think you're gonna watch the space for some good interest and see where Ben ends up because it's gonna be an interesting place.
I've been told that it's obvious that I'm very self-deprecating. I love making fun of myself. I take my work very seriously. This is very important to me. But I think you can have a lot of self-confidence, but also not take yourself too seriously. I
Oh, for
think
sure.
either I'm schizophrenic or that is the balance that I have. So I love making fun of myself, but believe me, I feel very strongly about this framework and I love promoting it and giving it to people. So I think it's a balance. Like, yeah, I would love every entrepreneur in the world to find this framework and to use it. And I think most of them would find it helpful. I would love to figure out a way to get it to everybody. I don't think I'll ever be able to get it to all the founders, but I do not take myself like too seriously to think that I am truly a best-selling author for life. I think this was a very exciting process of getting this book to print and very exciting to see it hit number one. I did not expect it to stay there forever, but the more people that can get it and use it, the happier I'll be.
Amazing. And yeah, thank you very much for joining me. It's been inspiring talking to you. I will put your pitch deck at the bottom here. Yeah, if people want to get hold of you, what's the best way of doing that?
So the best way, I prefer them to get to the content. The content is at feverpitchbook.com. Mm-hmm. And that's not just links to where you can get the book, but like I said, you can get a lot of free resources there. So there's a free online playbook that gives you interactive annotated slides. It gives you the 10 slides that you need for your 10 slide pitch deck with a lot of explanation about why those slides and what should go on them and what should not.
Mistakes. It's very good, by the way. It's very good. I'll do, yeah.
There's a lot of fun. That's totally free. And at the end of that, there's a pitch generator, which is not what you think. It's not an AI. Although friends of mine have made this into an AI. I prefer to view the founder as the AI. I'm saying he or she is the one that has the information in their head. I'm just trying to extract it out of them and get them to present it this way. So at the end of the playbook, there's a pitch generator where you can fill in and just keep trying your answers to those questions. It's very tightly character constrained because it's a forcing function to get you to really just give like the essence. And that spits out what is basically the perfect HEART elevator pitch for your startup. And I really encourage people to keep trying that and use that in more condensed settings or use that as the framework to expand out their pitch.
Well, great. As I say, I'll put all that information down below. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing where it goes.
Thanks for having me, Roy. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Power Movers, the podcast from All the Power, where our mission is to help business owners reclaim their time, reset their energy, and live the life they love. If this episode sparked something for you, your next step is simple. Take the fit check at allthepower.co.uk. It's a short clarity tool that helps you see where you are, what's getting in the way, and what might be possible if you have the right system. When you're ready, come and join the tribe. Power Movers start with our signature framework called Elevate 360, a system built to help you escape survival mode, create structure, and move forward with power. Just remember, everything we share here is based on real stories, experience, and frameworks. It's not personal business advice. Always speak to a coach or advisor before making big decisions. Because in the end, it's about more than business. It's about building a life you actually love. I'm Roy Castleman, and I'll see you in the next episode.